You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, we're live, pal. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the A-Side Live Chat. I am, of course, your host, Jose Youngs, here. After a week-long break, because Casey and I were off on-site covering UFC 264 inside the T-Mobile Arena and various other media obligations after... Whoa, I can hear myself. Something's happening.
Whoa. I can hear myself.
The magic of live TV.
Anyway, yeah. This is not even the worst thing that's happened to me as host of the A-Side Live Chat on live TV. Anyway, that's the echo in my ear is gone. Anyway, you guys know the drill. We were gone for a week. Now we're back. Joining us this week, Mr. Sean Alshadi. How's life in overcast, rainy Phoenix?
Life is wonderful. We just had a effective monsoon out here all day. My house is almost flooded out there, but it's good times. It's Wednesday. That means game four is tonight. Suns in five, baby. The road to Suns in five starts tonight.
Suns in five. I made sure to tell all the fighters that brought it up. I think Max Holloway said Suns in four. I think someone else said Suns in four. And I think Sugar Sean O'Malley said Suns in four. And I was like, Suns in five. Let's win it at home. Anyway, joining us on one of the twos, Casey. How's life in, I'm assuming, sunny Englewood?
It's good. It rained yesterday. You know, I have a little drought. And now it's the rain. There was a lot of dog poop in my backyard. And it got all wet. So it became mushy dog poop. So, you know.
Why didn't you pick it up?
Everything falls apart like a turd in the rain.
Oh. There you go. I think that's
that was poetic, Casey. That was poetic.
I think that's the phrasing. Yeah. Roy Batty said that, I think, too, on the rooftops before he died. Anyway, no one cares about that. This is the Shohei Ohtani Appreciation Podcast. No, but in all seriousness.
Dude.
Fucking love that. Love that guy.
Doesn't he speak English?
Well, he does. He just doesn't speak it on television. Anyway.
This is America. How's my Stephen A. Smith impression?
I got zero baseball contributions to bring to this conversation.
Shohei Ohtani is the best thing happening in sports right now, and I say that as someone living in Phoenix during a Phoenix Suns finals.
Dude, I might be jumping on the 405 and going to Anaheim this weekend, man. Got some baseball to watch. I'm excited.
You're gonna watch a lot
of. I don't really like Sprouts, but here I am.
Yes, you do. You're gonna hate. That's going to be some bad baseball, except Shohei Ohtani is going to be spectacular, because that's just the definition of it, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Anyway, you guys don't care about that. Sean wants to talk about Loki, so if you want to talk about Loki, you can ask those in the comment sections, apparently.
The finale was really good.
Julie's watching it right now. I have a lot of thoughts, but I don't want to give spoilers away. I just watched Black Widow 2. It was a movie.
Haven't seen that. Didn't watch it.
It was a movie. Anyway, you can ask all your fist fighting questions in the comments on the site. You can tweet at us. Some of you may even have my phone number and you can text it to me. That's happened a few times. Or you can leave it in the YouTube comments. Anyway, Casey, what is our first question?
First question. All right, here we go. Let me cut off this silly music. Jeez, that was too much fun. Oh, that's way too small.
Let's go from Jessica Crystal Crew with an A. Oh, for A side, I get it.
Let's go.
I thought Crystal. The A would be for Alshadi, right?
Probably. I would assume so. So that's Diamond, Shiny Diamond, Woot Woot, Al Shadi.
I'm the Woot Woot, I assume.
That's what, when I see those hands, that's the noise I make in my mind. Woot Woot.
Can I get a Woot Woot from you, Shane?
Woot Woot.
There you go.
Not happy with that energy, bro. Not happy.
Hey, man. Feed me some good questions and I'll bring you some great energy.
All right, here. Let's go straight to the YouTube comments.
From Vasivas, I apologize for mispronouncing your name. In the YouTube comments, what do you think of John Kavanaugh's assessment of the fight? Should he change his feedback? So, John Kavanaugh, Conor McGregor's head coach, said the first round was going well. I don't know the exact phrasing, but he had some... He's like, it was going well. It was doing this. Conor looked great. And then he shattered his ankle, and then the fight fell apart. So, Sean, is this on a scale of Javier Mendez or how should I mean, let me rephrase this. On a scale of Trevor Whitman to Edmund Shabazian, what side is this closer to in terms of coach's assessment of a fight?
Edmund Shabazian?
I'm not Edmund Shabazian. What's his – Edmund Tarverdian.
That's the lowest you – I figured the Diego guy would be the lowest, Fabia.
Well, I think I saw a lot of
people – That's got to be the lowest on the spectrum of coaching, right? Like if there's a –
Well, I think it was more like post-fight assessment or like in-between round assessment. I think a lot of people were calling him the new Edmund after this. I don't really have a stake in that argument. I'm just saying what the fans were. In our Instagram comments, that's what the comments were about.
As the sports czar of the world, I'm going to go ahead and decree that Joshua Fabia is the lowest rung of the coaching ladder.
What are you talking about? Josh Fabia has multiple wins as a coach in the UFC.
So does Tarverdian.
I think are we talking about Fabia? Okay, let's move on.
Let's move on. I don't have Kavanaugh's comments in front of me, right? But I saw them just as much as anybody else saw them. And they certainly do ring a little bit, a little strange, right? Because I don't know that anybody could see those comments and actually agree with them. Like, I nobody could see that Conor fight and actually like, oh, yeah, things are going great. The whole game plan was to get 10-8 in the first round and just get mollywopped
the idea was we're going to bruise up Dustin's elbow with Conor's forehead. That was the plan. We got him.
Yeah, we really had him where we wanted him, guys. I don't know. That whole thing rings very strange to me, and I find the discussion after this fight. I mean, there's a lot of narratives that have been talked about after this fight, but I do find the discussion after this fight about Conor's camp and the idea that if he's ever going to become Conor McGregor again, and to the way that we know him, right, as like a successful fighter, I guess, that he needs to start branching out and doing some different things with his camp because, I mean, you look at that camp. How many successful fighters would you say they've produced over the last 5 years, Jose?
SBG?
Yeah.
From the original crew, I think Connor's the only one even left in the UFC at this moment. From like that original, like Ashling Daly, Cathal Pendred.
So I mean Chris like Shield, non-Connor. What's a new fighter that
they not the original produced? Crew, but just, you know, coming out of SBG. Because
Shanae, you name any other camp.
Shanae Kavanaugh is doing decent in Bellator.
They got some Bellator people. That's it, right? Yeah, because they have a relationship with Bellator. I guess I interpret those comments the same way that Mike Brown interprets those comments. He spoke to our own Damon Martin here on MMA Fighting today, and he said basically, like, I don't know how he could see that way. And I guess that's where I come from. If that's your coaching assessment, Michael Bisping says Conor should drop you. I'm sure that's not his real coaching assessment. I'm sure that's just sort of what he's saying to the media. The whole Conor camp has been very, I'd say, curious the way they were talking in the lead up to that fight and since that fight. But, it's not – I wouldn't say those comments were reflective of reality at all.
So Shanae Kavanaugh is 4-4 in Bellator. I think Johnny Walker's still training at SBG Ireland. Last I saw, Gallagher's now under James Krause. Pedro Carvalho just lost to Pitbull in the Grand Prix, and those are all the fighters.
Not hearing anything good. Not hearing anything good.
Those are all the ones I can hear off.
And Kavanaugh, Carvalho has had two bad losses in a row, not just one. Yeah, Yeah.
So those are the ones I can think of off the top of my head. Of course, I don't know all of the fighters in the lower scene in Bellator, because obviously when they go do Bellator London, I think a huge chunk of that is a lot of the fighters on the undercard and prelims and postlims are SBG guys. But in the UFC, can't think of many.
But even not even UFC, just any high level.
Just on a high level.
Just, yeah. I'm not talking UFC. UFC is just one thing, but yeah. I mean, I don't want to ridicule Connor. Yeah, you know the word, Connor. But I think about the whole, you know, we're not here to take part. We're here to take over.
Here's John Kaplan.
I mean, he took over for a few years, certainly.
The Irish or Connor?
I would say Connor.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I mean, I was hoping for this big Irish, you know, influence in MMA, as far as actual competitors, not just, you know, waving flags, but just hasn't happened.
Here's the quote that here's the exact thing that John Kavanaugh said. Outside of, like, there might have been an ankle injury going into the fight, I thought the energy looked good, technique looked good, a few adjustments in between rounds, and I thought we were well on track to getting possibly a finish or at least keep the rhythm going for the rest of the fight. That was his assessment of the first round. Beautiful champ. Beautiful.
Hearing a lot champ. Of delusion there. I don't know. Either delusion or yes men-ism.
Yeah, this sounds so much like Ronda when Ronda was kind of having her fall, especially after the second loss to before we knew she retired, but after she lost to Nunes.
Amanda,
yeah, we were just thinking, you know, Ronda clearly is a very talented athlete, a good fighter. She just needs to change things up, and she chose not to, and that's what happened. And I feel like we're in the same boat with Connor now, you know? Maybe not to that extent, but it feels that way.
Well, I also don't know how much, because if you watch Connor's social medias or videos or anything, I don't know. He didn't really leave Dubai after Fight Island. He stayed there for a long time. I didn't see Kavanaugh or Roddy or any of his main training partners really until he went to California. Unless they weren't on the videos or anything like that. I know Connor was kind of keeping his camp secretive leading up to this fight. So, but until he went to California, a couple weeks before the fight, didn't see him with Kavanaugh or Roddy or any of his usual crew. So no idea who he was even training with over in Dubai.
That's on him. I mean, that's on God. Yeah. I mean, he can't do the whole thing. I didn't train correct again. It's like, I don't know. It's like, right. So our assessment is bad.
Should he change his feedback? Like, he already said it, so it's out there.
Yeah. I don't know. All right.
What's next?
Beep, bop, boop, bop. Oh, man. A lot of Connor talk. Right, let's get them all out of the way.
Shocking.
I mean, I would assume that's the biggest story of the week, right?
Yeah, but it's a big story, but I'm over it already. Come on, it's Wednesday.
Well, our fans are not, and they are more important. He posted a picture of Poirier's four-year-old. Surely the MMA media isn't going to find a way to excuse this / ignore this. Surely the MMA media will have the guts to ask Dana about it at the next pressure.
I love that. Surely the MMA media isn't going to ignore this.
Jose, can we have Shaheen read the question, please?
It's so silly. That's so silly every time I hear that.
And not let him deflect with a simple, yeah, that's out of line. Yeah, Dan, are you going to fine him? Is there even a code of conduct policy? How is posting a picture of a man he threatened to kill his child unacceptable to go without punishment? And the follow-up would be, Dana, will you use this in the next promo? Will you zoom in on the kid's face with the word Gonzo on the screen? How many buys will that do? What a salesman. So I didn't see these tweets while they were up, because apparently they were deleted real quick. But someone Twitter, and I want to give him credit, but I can't remember. I think it's Out of Context MMA or something like that. I don't think that's the handle, but that's what he goes by on Twitter. Screenshotted them all. He actually lined up the broadcast interview with Dustin Poirier to the it's like someone had a camera, like a phone camera on Connor yelling after the fight at Dustin, and he lines them up, and you can see the exact moment that he pointed at his head, pointing at his gun, saying, "You're gonna get it," to when Joe Rogan stops the interview and looks at Connor like he's crazy. And then Dustin's like, "Go interview him, go ask him what he's saying." Later, apparently, Connor McGregor tweeted Gonzo with a photo of Dustin Poirier's kid and some various other unfortunate things. I'm just going to call them unfortunate. Obviously, there are worse things you call them. But Sean, I don't know if
disgusting.
You saw the tweet.
No, yeah, disgusting. It's disgusting. I mean, I'm just sitting here waiting to talk. It's absolutely disgusting, man. Like all of this is disgusting. The whole aftermath of all of this was absolutely disgusting, man. Like we've heard so many people say it at this point. Paul Felder had a really nice rant about it, where it's essentially like, dude, You can't do that, right? Like, I understand that this is a fight game and people talk trash and that's part of the game. And I enjoy that as much as anybody. But there is a certain line you can't cross. And Conor crossed that line multiple times. He's crossed that line multiple times throughout his career. It's nothing new. But this is just, this feels like a bigger version of all of it. It was sour grapes and delusion to dialed up to 100. And I understand, like, the guy is sitting there with a broken leg. So maybe let's not interview him. Maybe let's not interview the dude with the broken leg who's obviously all hopped up on adrenaline and anger and desperation. Like, nothing good's going to come out of that, right? Like, that's just that's a weird decision on its own. But when you do, he says all these things. It's out there at that point. You can't excuse it. It's a terrible look. It's frankly, I'm done with it, man. Like, I don't have any interest in ever seeing a fourth fight between these guys. It's pretty obvious that Dustin Poirier is a much better fighter than Conor McGregor at this point. I think if they fought 10 times, Dustin probably wins 9 of them. Like, it's just where they are in their careers. Dustin's going to go down as an all-time great lightweight, and Conor's going to go down as a guy who beat Eddie Alvarez. You know, like, he's 1-3 at lightweight. Like, it is what it is. He had a chance to maybe be one of the greats of all time, and instead he's just going to be the richest fighter of all time and the most popular fighter of all time, and that's a hell of an accomplishment. But at this point, like, who wants to see a fourth fight? Who has any interest in this at all other than the most diehard of Conor fanboys?
Who has the most interest?
Every I'm sure
every UFC shareholder. That's who has.
That's not what I mean. I just mean on like a hardcore fan scale. Are people clamoring to see Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor 4? Because I don't feel like that's actually out there. Like, I'm sure when it happens, which it will happen, we'll all watch it. But that doesn't. That's not exactly what. I guess what I'm saying.
Yes, Dana White. His only comment I've seen so far has been not a fan. Or, yeah, that's out of line when someone brought up the pre-fight trash talk. But it was after the fight. He didn't say anything about it before the fight. Will he use it in the promos? Probably. He'd use the bus attack after he said it was disgusting in all of the promos. Even Teddy Atlas, when I interviewed Teddy Atlas after for our post show, he said, you have to carry yourself like, if you want to call yourself a champion, you got to carry yourself like a champion. And he wasn't even a fan of Conor's post-fight talk. So, disgusting all around. And as far as the MMA media, I am sure someone will ask. I'm sure it will be someone like John Morgan. Not sure the Mac Life will bring it up, whether it's their place to or not. I'm not quite sure, but I'm sure someone like John Morgan or someone on site will bring it up.
Well, what's there to bring up?
What do you mean?
Bring up to what? To Dana?
I would like. I personally would like Dana's comments on it. You can't not have something.
Hey,
I'm going to tell you what those comments are going to be. Yeah,
that's fine. But exactly, like, again, we're not talking about whether we know what he's going to say or not. Someone has to ask him about it. We all know what he's going to say. It needs to be brought up.
Let's answer the question. Is there even a code of conduct policy? No.
That's one of the questions. No.
No.
It's hyper selective. It's hyper selective.
So
it's Conor McGregor. He's the cash cow, and they're going to milk everything they can, juice every last drop out of that cash cow. I mean, they're not going to do anything to him.
I mean, Shane,
that's the reality of it.
You don't care about, you know, them running it back a fourth time. I didn't give a shit about them running it back a third time. So, like, a fourth time, I'm going to give less of a shit. But I work, and this is what I do for a job, and people want to still hear about it or whatever. So they're going to do Conor versus Dustin 2000.
They're going to do a best of 7. They're going to do like the NBA finals and just keep doing this until Conor finally wins one, and then it's just like, "Oh, look.
I won one. Let's go.
Title shot. Let's move on. Everybody, we saw that.
Dustin's going to get a lot of money to just keep on winning then. If it's best of 7, good on him then.
Okay, you know, you say all this. Counter argument, Ronda Rousey's tweet. That's just promotion. That's just, Conor.
I see one sore loser popping up another sore loser is what I see.
It's kind of funny how they're buds. I like that. It makes a lot of sense. We cover everything in this question. I saw a lot of question marks in it. All right, cool.
The main one, I don't think the MMA media is going to ignore it. Like, someone
we're
on the scene,
about it
right
now.
Right. Well, I'm talking about bringing it up
to
Dana.
I love the discussion of the MMA media as some monolith. It is so hilarious to me every time. I'm just like, oh, the MMA media doesn't talk about this, as if there's not hundreds of people in the MMA media. And you know, some people are probably talking about that.
Yes. You know, and it's funny. I just find it funny where between different fans where that line is crossed. For, you know, this fan in particular, for a lot of fans, was, you know, the line was crossed with, you know, threatening to kill or murder his family and stuff. I mean, it's I mean, I felt the line was crossed way back, you know, with Connor. So, like, this is, like, for me, I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, we've already accepted he can say whatever he wants, you know, and just still sell a fight. So, yeah, here we are. Yeah, the Connor question.
From CSAL 86, McGregor's future. Does Connor fight twice more in 2022 and be done with his contract and then be done with the UFC and fight Jake Paul? I see no way he lets himself be GSP'd by Dana. If he fights, I don't know the exact number of fights left. If he has three or two or whatever, like let's say he has, let's, yeah, I see you. We're going to, let's say hypothetically he has two. I don't know, just for the sake of this question. I am pretty confident that Dana, like Dana will not let him just walk away after two fights. Maybe he holds him up for a bit.
You think? Yeah, no,
I have a feeling
he's never letting Conor McGregor go.
Especially, I wouldn't be surprised if Nate tries to get one fight, Conor tries to get two more fights, and then they do Conor Nate 3 outside the UFC and make a ton of money, and they get to keep it and not give a UFC a chunk of any of it. But Sean, I'll let you answer this first. What do you make of Conor's contract situation, and will we see him ever outside the UFC?
I would be stunned if they'd ever reached that point. Like, I don't know that the UFC, I don't know how the UFC could possibly ever reach, let it reach that point, right? Like, it, there's just, that would be promotional malpractice, to steal a phrase from an old friend. But in terms of the future, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Conor McGregor is still the most popular fighter in all combat sports. Like, this, that's the reality of the situation, right? Like, this was what, the second highest selling pay-per-view of all time, it's looking like. I think that says something. He's Nate Diaz now. He could lose a billion times and people are still going to be interested. People are going to still want to watch the car crash. People are still going to be invested in the idea that maybe the old Conor is back. Maybe Mystic Mac is back one more time. He has thousands of fights he could sell. If they booked Conor versus Tony Ferguson or Conor versus RDA or Conor versus Nate Diaz, any of these type of fights right now, people would be interested. I would be interested. Like, that's just sort of the, we're human beings. Like, we're jerk-offs who love watching this stupid circus sport. So, like, you know, all you got to do is sell me the car crash and eventually people are going to like it, right?
They could do Charles Oliveira versus Conor McGregor and it would sell so much better than Charles Oliveira versus Dustin Poirier.
Oh, it would do like four times the number.
That's what, yeah, I mean. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. And, dude, you know this. You know there's the shareholders are going to Dana and like, why don't we just do it? Let's just go for it. Let's make some money.
I mean, we've reached past the point where the worm has turned, right? Like, no one cares anymore about any of this. People put up some perception of like, oh yeah, this is all bad. This is like, I hate the idea of Ciryl Gane versus Derek Lewis. And then it's been a week, and now nobody's really talking about that, how stupid and pointless that fight is. And what, next month when that fight comes, or whenever, I think, yeah, that is next month, yeah. Houston. People are going to be excited for it. People are going to buy it. People are going to watch it. So it's like the UFC has successfully cracked the code of just like, well, just give them anything and they'll learn to like it. So like, I wouldn't be, I mean, I would be stunned if Conor
happens,
Charles Oliveira, but I wouldn't, right, actually.
This is what happens when you also put ticket sales out before the main event, because then it sells out and then you put whatever main event you want in the top spot. Casey, what, you looked like you were going to say something?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why I hate the whole idea. It's like, oh, well, they put Derek Lewis to sell tickets. Like, bro, the card is already sold out. They did fine. I mean, that's fine. I mean, yeah, the whole ticket sales and thing. It's just, that's all I was going to say. Yeah, just. But I like the idea. This question says, well, are we going to let himself get GSP'd by Dana? The thing about GSP won. So like he was a champ. So that's why he's stuck in these contracts. That's what Khabib actually talks about. When you become the champ in the UFC, you actually feel like a prisoner, you know. So I said going into this fight, if Conor would have beaten Dustin,
there's no way he fights Charles.
Yeah, no way he fights Charles, because then he's trapped by the belt. The belt is a prison, and clearly you don't make more money with the belt when you're on a level of Conor. So yeah, so I don't think he's gonna GSP himself. Because you have to have a belt for that.
I'm just saying, it does seem as if Conor's recovery is going to be maybe quicker than we thought. He's already talking about a timeline that's, I think, more ambitious than I expected. We'll see
how true that is.
What I was going to say. Like, we'll see how true that is. But if he is able to come back by, like let's say, early 2022, Dude, the Tony Ferguson and the RDA fights either would be super intriguing to me. I just want to see him take a step down in competition, right? Like, Dustin is the best lightweight in the world. I think all three of us would agree with that. Like, fight someone lower. Tony Ferguson is right there. RDA is right there. And they're in super similar points of their career. I'll go for either of those.
I think I wouldn't be surprised if Conor was, like, over the years, Conor was planting seeds for a lot of these lightweights that aren't top five, but maybe 6 to 10. Like, he was planting seeds for future fights by, like, how many times did he randomly call out Paul Felder over the years? He's kept that RDA rivalry. He's the Tony Ferguson paradigm.
He renewed the RDA rivalry. He went out of his way to renew the RDA.
So what I'm saying is, I would not be surprised if he was just planting the seeds for these top 10 lightweights, but not top five, just so he can try to blast through his contracts with a bunch of fights that have bad blood, you know, and it's just not fighting random people. Like, if he fought RDA or Tony Ferguson, there's at least a storyline there, if that makes sense. Do you get what I'm trying to say? Like, just plow through fights. Yeah. So, but maybe that's just him having foresight and planting those seeds years in advance. Anyway,
I think we're giving Conor a little too much credit. I think he just sees people and yells at them, and we go, "Oh, he's planting a seed." I mean, they could do Conor. Actually, I think Conor versus RDA is way too tough a matchup if the UFC wants Conor to win. This version of Tony, maybe. But I think you do Conor versus Dennis Seaver type matchup, whatever that level of it.
Drag Dennis Seaver back out of retirement.
Just bring Dennis Seaver
the
back.
The rematch. We're running it back, baby. Let's go.
I would love that. I mean, like, yes.
Where's Cole Miller at? Cole Miller's on the fight.
What about Drew Dober? Like, 15th ranked lightweight, only does stand up, doesn't really grapple.
I think he needs to fight someone in that range. Yes, I don't know if Drew Dober is a particular person, but I think it's someone outside of the top 10.
But like, it's Conor, what you just outlined is Drew Dober's wet dream to randomly land a Conor fight.
Yeah.
But like, I'm just the name. Like, give him someone in the top 15 that's not going to shoot for takedowns, that has an exciting stand up style. I think it would be a fun fight. Like, I'm not going to say no to Drew Dober and Conor in terms of a stylistic matchup, but it's just not going to happen. This is the first name that came to my head.
All right, let's keep moving. What's next?
Terrence Leverett. This is a good one.
Yeah, go for it.
Conor refused to wear the crypto.com stuff. He has been on his F you pay me lately. Do you think more fighters should do the same? Like, if everyone does it, they all can't get in trouble. Besides a union, I think this is the way. Thoughts? So that's the first question. We'll answer this before we move on to the second one. Yeah, he didn't. So Conor McGregor didn't wear the crypto.com stuff to the ceremonial wins, and he came in without a shirt at the fights, right? So he didn't even wear the fight kit out.
It was
so
very purposeful. And real quick, at
the ceremonial weigh-ins, outside of the main event, everyone kept their shirt on, which I thought was very weird. I don't know if they were told to do that or no one just bothered to take their shirt off. But I mean,
they were told to it, right? Yeah, like, no usually one but the main protocol event, is to take a shirt off.
This is the fucking weigh-ins, man. That's what it's about, man. Let me see the muscles, you know? But, okay, sorry.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank & Trust. Members FDIC.
Do you think more fighters should do the same? If everyone does it, they can't get in trouble besides the union. I think this is the way. So, Sean, is there any possible scenario where all fighters just band together and just say, F this crypto stuff, we're just going to take them off before we walk out?
No. No, no, there's no scenario that. Come on, man. I've given up hope on this. I gave up hope on this years ago. I think the first half of my career, I was a very loud and ardent supporter of the idea that these guys needed to unionize. And I would write all these stories about it and do all this research about it. And ultimately, it led to nowhere, right? It led to a bunch of failed unions and just
a lot of mean tweets.
Yeah, a lot of ridiculousness all around. It's just like,
Dana saved it.
I know. At this point, I've given up. It's not my responsibility to make sure that these guys get together. I don't think it's ever going to happen. When we did the anonymous fighter survey in, I think it was 2020, last year, over at The Athletic, my former place of work, where we talked to close to 170 or 200 fighters anonymously, and just sort of asked them a lot of questions, try to get a gauge of the landscape. Overwhelmingly, they all supported the union. I think I can't remember the exact number, but it was close to like 70 or 80% were either for the union or not against the union. And over the course of all the interviews I did for that, again, talking to these people, even anonymously, like these people know their names are not going to be connected to this. I had countless fighters who were sort of too scared to answer the question or were trying to dodge the question or skirt around it. And then I had a whole nother group of fighters who would say yes, but I know for a fact it's never going to happen because we're all too selfish and we all think we're going to be the next Conor McGregor. And that's it. Like, right. Like most fighters think they're going to be that guy. Most fighters think they're going to be Kamaru Usman. They're going to be this dominant champion, even if maybe they don't think they're going to be Conor and they don't think they're going to be this bombastic, you know, huge star. Most fighters think they're going to be an Usman or a Peter Yan or something like that. They think they're eventually going to reach that point and then they're going to get what's theirs. And unfortunately, only the 1% of the 1% can do that, right? So, no, I don't think that will ever happen. But the idea, I did enjoy seeing Connor just say, you know, like these people aren't paying me. Like I'm gonna just wear whatever I want, and somebody try to stop me. I did of all the Connor antics of last week, that was the one thing that I actually kind of found pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, a fan asked me on Twitter about the union thing. And I was like, yeah, it'd be a good idea, but it's never going to happen, this and that. And his response was, yeah, I feel you. At some point, you can't be the one that cares more than the fighters. I was like, that's a good way of putting it.
That's exactly it. Someone told me 2 years ago, I feel like I care about this more than the fighters. And that's sort of when I decided that I don't care about this anymore. And that resonated with me of like, yeah, I think you're actually right. Like, I think a lot of the media cares about this much more than the actual fighters do. So at a certain point, like, right, like I can't, it's not my fight to fight.
But I get it too. Because look who the fighters, every fighter that's been very vocal about unionizing, look what's happened to them. Not good.
That's what I was going to say, because I don't know that that's true, right? Because Donald Cerrone, George St. Pierre, TJ Dillashaw, they all supported that union, and Uriah Faber, like there are a lot of guys who supported all these various union efforts over the years, and then, you know, I don't know, they slide a title shot their way or they slide a contract extension their way or something, and it's just like, oh yeah, I mean, Donald Cerrone lasted with the MMA, whatever that was called, for like 24 hours, right? Like the next day he was telling people like, oh, I don't know what that was, they tricked me or something to the effect. I'm paraphrasing.
Pretty much that.
So like, that's what this is, right?
He's like, I just showed up for the free t-shirt. Yeah, it's like
cut off the head of the snake and the rest of it just shrivels up.
I think Leslie Smith has been kind of critical on George St. Pierre about that too, a little bit, you know. But
fairly, I would say fairly.
Yeah,
he got what he wanted out of that whole situation.
Question two from Terrence Leverett. Well, I think that Connor. Well, I think what Connor said was awful. How is this different from a rap battle? I know it comes off as Eminem versus Moby, not Jay versus Nas. I know y'all listen to rap. Do we keep the same energy? They both can end in horrible things.
I'm not sure I followed. Connor, there wasn't a beat when Connor.
They're fist fighting. Like Eminem and Moby and Jay versus Nas. Like someone said something mean about the other over a ill beat. I get in the 90s, like Suge Knight can roll up on you and just like decapitate you if you wanted, but that's not how it works these days. I guess it happens with various other people in the Bloods that are in the rap game now, but. No, I would not. I would say this is a lot different.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless Kavanaugh was there with like two turntables and gave, if
John Kavanaugh and Roddy showed up at the next Fighters Only Award, like they did at the Source Awards, like in whatever year it was, and they were like, if you're all not with West Coast Death Row, then F you. If they did that, maybe. But until I see that, ain't happening.
Well done, Casey. Thank you. That was good produce work right there.
Apparently, Nas and Pac got into it that night, too, back in the 90s. Also, Nas beat Jay in that. Jay-Z.
All right.
Are we still keeping score in that? Jeez, man, come on.
Well, he won the battles. He won every battle.
What's
no,
next?
I'm going to say this, going. And then we can move on. Nas won the battles. Jay signs Nas to his record label. So he won the war. He makes money off of Nas now. Moving on. Herb Dean stoppage. Tris, yes. In your opinion, do you think the stoppage by Herb Dean in the fight between Sean O'Malley and Chris Moutinho was justified? Do you think Herb stopped the fight due to what happened to Calvin Cater and all the damage he took, which caused a little more controversy on why the fight was stopped sooner? I'm a little surprised Herb called this one when there was only 30 seconds left. You might as well let Moutinho go out on a shield just as Cater did when he fought. From my standpoint, I thought this was a little peculiar. Casey, you wanted to talk about this, so have at it.
Oh, this is a great question.
This is one of those rare occasions where me and Dana White were right on the same page. Like Dana said that fight could have been stopped at pretty much any point after the first round. And I agree. If anything, it was a late stoppage, but a late stoppage is still better than no stoppage. And if at those last 30 seconds, luckily Sean O'Malley's hands are made of glass. So both of them were, I think he might've broken both of his hands. That's simply the reason why he couldn't knock, Mr. Moutinho out. Yeah. Mr. Moutinho, you are a tough MF-er. Congratulations. But that's not what the fight. I mean, I don't know. It's like you got, what was it, 2,000 strikes? You got hit with some record number of significant strikes.
It was like 200 and something.
Yeah. Right? And it was all one side. It was like
230 maybe.
Yeah. It was just like, I just don't understand.
At like an 80% clip too.
Yeah.
Like he let's say like accuracy rating.
I just don't understand the uproar about this. There's no such thing as a moral victory. Why the hell would the ref go, you know what, get punched in the face 30 more seconds so you can get a moral victory? I just don't get it. I don't get the uproar about this. I was kind of shocked that all the fans and a lot of MMA media were kind of like, that was a horrible stoppage. He deserved to get his ass handed to him for 30 more seconds. I just don't get it. I was just very confused by that whole situation. And to me, it was a late stoppage, if anything.
So let me jump in here because I feel like I had a bit of a roller coaster of an evolution with this stoppage. And because initially I was on that side that you were just talking about, Casey, when this happened in the moment, I mean, I will admit my bloodlust was at peak levels, right?
I get it. You know,
that's what I'm saying. Like in the moment, it's like, no, like this was just going to, this something was just about to happen. Like it really did feel like that last 30 seconds were about to be utterly spectacular for Sean O'Malley. Like he was really, that felt like it was about to get dangerous. Pretty quickly.
Yeah.
For those last 30 seconds, the way he was sitting on his punches and really pouring it on, or at least looked like he was about to. But I think by the end of the night, once I sort of got away from that, again, that initial moment of just like the bloodlust that rushes through you when you're watching these sort of things, I did come around to the other side. I wrote about this a little bit on Sunday on MMA Fighting, but you just look at the numbers. We mentioned it, 230 significant strikes at a 72% clip. That was what it was. But then the real number to me was 76% of those strikes, excuse me, 76% of those strikes were head strikes. Like almost all of them were head strikes. Sean wasn't working the body a lot. Like he was purely aiming for the head of the green zombie. And man, like that, you can't, that's how boxers die, right? Like that is how people die in the boxing ring, is taking all of these head strikes over and over again
for a long period of time too. Yeah.
Yeah. The prolonged beating aspect of it. Like this was not going to get better. I agree. I think it could have been stopped sooner now in retrospect, now that I've gotten some distance from it. Like I don't mind the stoppage. I'm glad it stopped at some point. But yeah, like this could have been stopped sooner. A corner could have thrown in a towel. Obviously, it's a hard thing to ask of a corner in that spot where it's a short notice fight against a guy like Sean O'Malley. But yeah, I have absolutely no problems with the stoppage now, as opposed to initially, I definitely did.
Do you understand why Moutinho is the man that this was actually in the fist fight? Do you understand why he's upset with it? Because if you watch our Mike Hecht's interview with him, he said, stopped it for no reason. And he wanted those last 30 seconds.
We'll see. Moutinho, so like
Moutinho should be mad. Moutinho should be mad because he's a fucking fighter and he should be angry. Anytime a fight stopped and the fighter's going, what the hell? What the hell? I am never critical of that fighter because that's what they do. They go out there and fight. And they are prepared. They are prepared to die in there, and that's what makes Chris Moutinho a good fighter. That's all. So yeah. I have no issue.
I will say.
Sorry, Sean.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, because Casey, you mentioned the idea of moral victories, right? And that there aren't any moral victories. And that was like a conversation we saw a lot on Saturday of like, hey, man, like this guy earned the dignity of having that moral victory of leaving Vegas with just a decision loss rather than a stoppage loss. Like that would make it really any, like that would change anything moving forward. That's silly. And I understand it in the moment saying that, because again, that everything that's rushing through us at that moment, the adrenaline, all of it. But there aren't, moral victories have zero tangible value in the real world. And we live in the real world. Those type of things do not exist in this game. If you just give Chris Moutinho another 30 seconds of just letting Sean O'Malley tee off with headshots, like you don't know how much more damage that's going to do. In the grand scheme of things, I don't even think it matters much, right? Like no one's talking about Chris Moutinho today any worse than they would have had it went to a decision. Like I don't know that his stock was affected at all by the fact that this didn't go to a decision. Like if anything, it kind of helped him because now he has this additional argument of like people being outraged for him. So I get the idea in theory, but I think in concept, it's not factual. It's not right.
His phrasing was, when in the interview with our own Mike Heck, he's viewing a loss as a loss and he's pissed off at the loss, but it makes him more agitated that it was a TKO loss rather than a decision loss. That's just his personal view. He's the one that was getting punched in the face, so he has every right to be upset with that. Yeah, I don't have an issue with the stoppage whatsoever.
Reminds me of Connor. It's a doctor stoppage. It's a doctor stoppage. It's not a TKO.
I just want to say, like, when Chris got that fight and a bunch of his teammates from New England messaged me saying he's probably gonna lose, but he's not gonna get knocked out. It's TKO, but he's on his feet.
They called it.
I was like, I messaged a bunch of them. I was like, damn, you nailed that to a T. And they said, because you could see him talking a lot in there, they described him as a guy that when they roll or spar, no matter who he's rolling with, he talks so much. And then as soon as training's over, he's like, oh man, you got me that day. Get you tomorrow. And then like he moves on. Like he just, talking is just what he does. So no matter who Chris fights, whether he likes you or not, he's gonna keep jawing. So yeah. And I'm very excited for his next fight though.
Yeah, that's the thing. Ultimately, it was a win for him because I think everybody is going to be much more excited for his next fight than they would have been had he just debuted on a random UFC Vegas card on 100%. Some prelim, right? Like it's gonna be a win for him. I just hope that he learns some head movement. Take your head off the center line a little bit because this is not sustainable, and I want to see you have a long and flourishing career.
Now he can train full time. He's no longer working on the line at a paint company. He got an extra $75,000. In that bonus plus whatever other money he got out of it, so I'm sure he can now concentrate on being a full-time fighter and learning
that,
some head movement.
That's like the weird positive to come out of this is the fact that if that fight would have been stopped properly, say at the end of the first round, he doesn't get fight of the night bonus. Sean O'Malley doesn't get fight of the night bonus. It just goes down as a fight, and Sean O'Malley, and we go, yeah, that was a mismatch, and we move on.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
It sucked for Nico Price and Michelle Pereira because they probably lost out in fight of the night because of that fight.
Right. Right, right, right. Thank you for the question, Tristan Gordette. Don Draper on Twitter. The Big Don 23. If Dustin beats Charles, does he have the best resume ever at lightweight / featherweight?
Ooh-wee.
He's best way up there.
Ever. Best ever. I don't think, so, go for it, Jose.
I wouldn't. Resume-wise, like the names he fought, I can't think of many people that would have a better resume, like a list of fighters under their belt that fought, that he fought. I still there's would put difference. Maybe. There's a yeah, difference there's a difference between. Win, right? Yes, correct. Just to answer this, the best resume ever at lightweight featherweight, who's he? Like, Casey, do you remember when we did this show with Andreas? I read down the list of fighters that Anthony Pettis fought between like 2015 to now. It's pretty much the top 10 greatest lightweights ever, minus if you want to include BJ Penn in that list and Habib. Pretty much those are the only two he hasn't fought. He's fought pretty much everybody else. Dustin's the same. Who hasn't he fought out of the greatest lightweights ever outside of the like the prime BJ Penn? He's fought everybody. So best resume, I can't think of many people better than Dustin at lightweight.
Oh, yeah. If you go.
Well, you can add the featherweight aspect of it, too.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, for the handful of fighters that fought significant fights at both those weight classes, without a doubt, Dustin is the best lightweight featherweight ever.
I'm going to go back. Let me go back. I'm going to start. Let me read from his first UFC fight. His first couple UFC fights were Josh Crispy, Jason Young, Pablo Garza. And then this is starting at 2012 in a row. Max Holloway, Korean Zombie, Jonathan Brookins, Cub Swanson, Eric Koch, Diego Brandão, Akira Korasani, Conor McGregor. That was his featherweight run. Great names. Jumps up to lightweight. Carlos Diego Fajeda, Yancy Medeiros, Joe Duffy, Bobby Green, Michael Johnson. Lost to Michael Johnson. Jim Miller, Eddie Alvarez, no contest. Pettis, Gaethje, Eddie Alvarez, Max Holloway, Habib, Dan Hooker, Connor.
Pretty spectacular.
Spectacular.
I might throw Anthony Pettis's resume in terms of like fights in a row, maybe a notch above, because he also went up to welterweight and fought a bunch of high level fighters too.
Yeah, we're talking lightweight featherweight.
I would put maybe Anthony Pettis above because in a row at lightweight, Edson, Eddie, RDA, Gilbert, Benson, Cerrone. Like Joe Lozon, Clay Guida, Benson Henderson, like that's a lot of, those are some big names of lightweight too. I think maybe in terms of resume, I'm not talking wins and losses. Maybe Anthony Pettis above, but in terms of wins and losses, I can't think of any better than Dustin.
Yeah,
I mean, so I would submit to this conversation. Also, Rafael Dos Anjos has to be under consideration because Rafael Dos Anjos has since 2013 is the guys he's fought: Cerrone, Habib, Jason High, Benson Henderson, Nate Diaz, Anthony Pettis, Cerrone, Alvarez, Ferguson, Tarek Safadi, Neil Magny, Robbie Lawler, Kobe Covington, Kamaru Usman, Kevin Lee, Leon Edwards, Michael Chiesa, and Paul Felder. That's outrageous! Like that is a murderer's row across two different divisions. But I do think the idea of Dustin right now in a historical sense is really interesting. That's one I want to explore just for a second, because I know people get tired of the greatest of all time conversations and sort of like that like, oh, is this the best lightweight of all time situation? Habib is the best lightweight of all time. I think we can all agree on that, and he probably will be for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to match and top what he did. But there's a big gaping hole in number two, lightweight of all time. I don't know that there's a definitive answer to that. You could give me a lot of different answers, and I think you could make case for any of them, right? You could make case for Eddie Alvarez, Frankie Edgar, BJ Penn. Okay. Like, there's a lot of guys who you could throw into that number two spot, and you could make a compelling case that I could eventually come around to it. I really feel like Dustin right now, with the resume that you just listed off, Jose, and the run that he's been on in this UFC stint since he went back up to lightweight, I think he's like 12-2 with maybe like a no contest in there. And the names that he's beaten and the ways that he's beaten them with all out drag out wars and finishes and all of this. Man, if Dustin goes and beats Charles Oliveira probably later this year and then just, I don't know, even defends that title once. It feels to me like Dustin Poirier will have a pretty secure spot on the number two lightweight of all time.
which is a crazy, crazy thing to say about this guy who, I mean, did anybody see any of this coming? It felt like even halfway through his lightweight run, he was still being doubted, and he was still like the underdog on so many of these different fights. And the dude just continues to persevere and dig deep and find these wins and beat these people. And he is at this point evolved into just one of the most complete 155ers we have ever seen. And it is utterly spectacular, I think. And
yeah, I do. Go ahead.
I think it's amazing because when Dustin lost, like Conor's lost, like Conor came into the UFC with like two losses. We just didn't see those losses. They were kind of like, you know, on regional cards, you know. Mm-hmm. But when Dustin lost, he lost big. You know, he got knocked out big in a main event by Michael Johnson. He got knocked out big by Conor McGregor. So we got to see those losses.
Even the first big one, the Korean Zombie one. It's like his first main event. Yeah, yeah. And he's like crying on national TV about it. Like, you're right. A lot of his losses were huge losses.
They're in our brain. You know, it's hard to forget about them. But if we just take those just as losses and not as like these big kind of dramatic monumental losses, just losses, just like Conor had losses, then all of a sudden, like his record does look a lot better if you just go take out the drama in it, you know. And go back to this question. Dustin's amazing.
I rattled off that resume, but I want to add his 2.5 year span with Jim Miller, which was a decision win, fight of the night, Eddie Alvarez no contest, and then submission over Pettis, KO over Gaethje, KO over Alvarez, one of the greatest fights of all time against Max Holloway. That 2.5 year span, has there been a better string of wins in lightweight history?
That's up there. I mean, I would argue that
because like Anthony Pettis fought maybe bigger names, but was like 500 in that run. Like those are all violent wins in spectacular fashion.
I would argue that the 2 year stretch of McGregor, choking out Poirier, choking out Gaethje by Habib, that was maybe tops it just in terms of pure impressiveness because of how overwhelming and dominant those performances are. And if Dustin does go down as maybe the number two lightweight of all time, that's a really crazy result that we saw at UFC 242 there between Habib and Dustin. But yeah, man, that's a great, great run that you just named there for Poirier.
Yeah, and then it all started with a KO loss to Michael Johnson in Hidalgo, Texas.
And Dustin was the underdog. And I think almost all of those fights, like the Justin fight, he was the underdog. The Alvarez fight, I think he was the underdog. And the Max fight, I know he was the underdog.
Yep.
He was underdog. It's crazy. And in the rematch versus Max, he was an underdog?
Yeah, man. I remember I was at that fight. Yeah. It was in Atlanta.
I think that Holloway fight is like, because we all knew that Dustin Poirier was one of the greatest lightweights on planet Earth. I think that Holloway fight really just catapulted him to another level. He was stuck in no man's land. Those were his words. He didn't know when he was going to fight. And then because it should have been Tony Ferguson for the interim title. It should have been, remember? And then Tony was like, no, I want to fight for the real belt. So then they made Max versus Dustin and it turned out to be epic.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy? Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
But if you remember the context around that fight, like that was Max at his absolute zenith.
Yeah,
like, he hadn't lost yet. Max Holloway. He just knocked out Jose Aldo twice. Then they had the Brian Ortega thing in Toronto. That was just like the craziest sequence of just like the craziest 20 minutes that we had ever seen. Like that, there was a reason Max was the favorite going into that. And I remember that fight week, most people were picking Max, and I was a little surprised of like, guys, are you ignoring what Dustin's doing here? Like he's in the middle of a really historic run, but it's incredible, man. It really is. It's good to see. I love seeing stories like what Dustin
is also
into.
Physically a huge lightweight. I don't want him to move up to welterweight anytime soon, but if he wants to bump up to lightweight at some point in his career, there's fun fights there too.
He's a big huge boy.
Yeah, he's like, he walks around like a buck 90.
Yeah,
you ever see
anyway,
before we leave this question, I think it's on Netflix. Go watch Fightville.
Yeah,
and there are photos of
great one.
Great, yeah. This is all pre WEC Dustin Poirier, and they show pictures of him when he was 200 plus pounds.
There's that photo of him and his wife going to like a dance or a wedding or something.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, Casey. Recently, this past year, I revisited Fightville for something I was writing for Chris Rennie's book, The Art of Violence. I believe it was what it was called.
Yes.
And I rewatched Fightville for the piece that I was going to write for that. And it is such an interesting rewatch now in 2021, knowing what we know about Dustin Poirier, to see that all of this of him like warming up in rodeo stalls and like hearing his mom talk about like how he's finally found something where he can be the best in the world. And that's all he wants is to one day be able to put his hands up in the air and say that he's the best in the world and that this saved his life and all of this. My man, Dustin, you can put your hands up in the air and say that you're the best in the world. You did it.
I think I saw some clips of Primetime out there today when Nick Diaz was on Primetime, and I'm just so bummed that today's MMA fans never got to experience a proper UFC promotion for pay-per-view. Not just embedded and stuff like that, or you know, Rogan yelling "Oh!" on promos, but like those 30-minute Primetime episodes that built up pay-per-views. And because Dustin Poirier never got one of those. And it's a shame because Dustin's story is so unique and so inspirational to this sport. And I wish more people knew about it. That's all.
His fight against Zombie is still my favorite fight ever. Who is the Jake Paul? Who is in the Jake Paul robot? How does it function? Clearly the question of the week. So if you haven't seen it.
Thank you, Cynthia Vance.
I have so many questions. So the Jake Paul robot was my biggest takeaway of the Jake Paul press conference with Tyron Woodley. We talked about this actually on a reaction pod that we filmed yesterday with Mike Hackett and Damon Martin. But like, I desperately need to know what was going on with the Jake Paul robot. Like, is this a gigantic minute bowl sized man in this robot? Do I have two different 4-footers on each other's shoulders, like the kids in the bar who have the trench coat or are trying to order a beer? Like, is that the setup here? Like, are someone on stilts? Like, that dude was massive, and it was clearly a human being in there. It's not, Casey, I know you're going to tell me it's a real robot. It's not a real robot.
I need to know
what was going on with this robot.
There's little, robots aren't that big, first of all. There's little robots stacked on top of each other to give the impression of one giant robot. And by the way, these are our new future robot overlords. A little respect, please. A little respect to our overlords.
You guys are both wrong.
If that's the case, I am so not comfortable with Jake Paul having access to that technology.
Hey, Jake Paul, he's smart. He's a smart prize fighter. He knows how to promote fights, and he knows who to kiss ass to. You kiss ass to our robot 12-foot jaw overlords.
You guys both read comic books, so I don't have to explain to you, but it's clearly similar to the Hulkbuster armor that Iron Man wears. It's just a large suit of armor with a man embedded inside. Or it could be or better yet, for all you cinephiles out there, you guys have all seen Men in Black. You know when the guy's face opens up and there's the tiny alien living in the guy's face? Similar to that too. Or it could be like in Ultimate Spider-Man, the comic book, where Mysterio sends his avatar to another dimension and it's just a giant robot that he controls from another parallel universe. But that is neither here nor there.
I love the Men in Black callback. That was such a great movie that nobody ever talks about.
Men in Black was great. I watched
me and my friends quote, "It doesn't matter. You're not even gonna be matter." Like we quote that like way too often.
Someone told me this is, and I apologize to Darren Elkins for this, but I watched his fight whenever he fought Ryan Hall. I was watching with someone that doesn't watch MMA, and this is like the first time that he has ever watched MMA. And I was explaining to him about Ryan Hall, why he's so popular. And the guy's like, "Yeah, of course he's gonna win. The guy he's fighting looks like the guy, the cockroaches that go into the guy's skin."
Edgar.
Yeah. He goes, "Darren Elkins looks like the guy who lost his skin and now the bugs are wearing it." I was like, "Oh, don't say that about Darren Elkins."
That's mean. Darren Elkins is a lovely person.
He is a fantastic person. It was a weird fight, but since then I've tried to incorporate Men in Black more into the MMA scene. So let's make that a priority.
You're doing the Lord's work out there, Jose.
Men in Black 3 is also, I loved Men in Black 3. Men in Black 2, yeah.
Men in Black 3? The one with...
With time travel and that sad ending.
Is that the Josh Brolin one?
Yeah, the ending ruled. The ending made me sad.
I can't say I remember anything about two wars.
The ending was time where Agent K meets Agent J as a kid after his dad dies. Oh, sad times.
Spoiler alert.
All right. We're going to fly through these last ones because I got to jump off.
We got 5 minutes. Do you agree with Habib's prediction that Nate would win the McGregor trilogy? Sean, yes or no?
I kind of do, yeah.
Casey?
Absolutely, I do.
Me too. First off, welcome back, Sean. Suns in 5, damn straight. Jake Paul has carefully chosen his opponents up until this point. I don't see this as a winnable fight for him. Do you think he bought into Tyron's losing streak too much, or is praise due for step up in competition? Maybe both. Maybe it's just a competitive fight. I'm sure he thinks he can win, but Sean, real quick, thoughts on the fight?
I see it as a very winnable fight for him, and I think it's a really smart and interesting fight to pick for him because Tyron Woodley is someone who we know is a striker. He's someone who we know is a power puncher, but he's not a striker in the sense that you would think of as a boxer, right? He's not throwing out 10-punch combinations and doing all sorts of Philly shell defense and things like that. Like, he's a very particular MMA puncher who has wrestling skills that can offset sort of like that sort of technique, right? Like, he can throw with absolute power and not be afraid of getting taken down. Like, that's a very, very different thing than being a great boxer. I don't know that Tyron Woodley is a great boxer. He might be able to become an okay boxer, but he doesn't have a lot of time to do it. I think it's a very winnable fight for Jake Paul. I kind of see him winning it, but I don't want that to happen. I'm not going to lie. I'm not some unbiased journalist in this one. I hope Tyron Woodley knocks him the hell out, but I don't know that that's going to happen. It's definitely winnable.
Casey, really quick, just is this winnable for Jake Paul, or is just Tyron should be the overwhelming favorite?
I think Tyron's the favorite, but it is winnable, and I think this is a smart matchup by Jake, mainly due to the size difference. He's going to lack experience and skill, but Jake will have significant size on Tyron Woodley and significant reach. And reach in boxing is much more of a factor than it is MMA.
Correct.
Especially if you know how to use it.
Yes.
Jake has a good jab.
Jake's fine. And that's the fun of the pay-per-view, the fight. It's a mystery. We really don't know what we're going to get.
He fights like someone that's 3-0. He just happens to have a very good jab. Anyway, is there one more? Why the recent trend of MMA media switching jobs? Is it all money? Is each place that much different to work for? Is it something completely different that I haven't thought about? So Casey and I still work at the same place we've been working at for the last 2.5 years. Sean, you just switched over. It's clearly all about the money, right?
That's hilarious. I don't know. Why the trend? I feel like these things come in waves, right? Like, it feels like every time there's a major shift in the MMA landscape, it's kind of just not one person, it's multiple people. I don't know. I don't know why it's happening. I think
Do you think that's just a coincidence, though? Because I've got a few people, fans ask me this, like, is it a coincidence that everyone shifts around at once, like you said? Like, no one's just planning the big shift.
No, it's not a coincidence. I mean, we're all friends behind the scenes. We're talking to each other when we're not on YouTube, you know, of like, hey, man, are you thinking of doing this? Are you thinking of doing that? So it's definitely not a coincidence. Okay. I mean, but each place is very, very different to work for. I will say, like, coming from where I was just at is an infinitely different job than what I'm doing over here. Like, it's not even comparable. It's night and day. So there's a big difference in the landscape. And ultimately, I think it's good for the MMA media to have more out there. If the Ringer wants to open up an MMA department, that's fantastic for MMA. That means more jobs. Right now, how many real full-time jobs are there in MMA? Like 20?
Maybe. Yeah.
In the
Maybe.
World? Yeah. Like that's it.
Competition is good.
The more jobs, the better, man. The more opportunities for everybody, the better.
I just want everyone to get paid. Everyone should get paid. Anyway, is that it, Casey?
That is it.
That is it. This has been Jose. That has been Sean. That has been what?
I know. Oh, no, we don't have to run out. We can say our byes.
Well, it's okay. Yeah. This has been. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on the A-Side Live Chat again this Wednesday. Sean, Suns in five.
I am so damn nervous.
And tonight. I'm putting
nerves, man. That's the best part.
That's the best part. Nerves are the best part.
The Scott Foster bullshit that happened on Sunday really got me on tilt. And the idea that if we can't touch Giannis, if the fact that anybody just touches him or he can just run into us going down the lane and that's a foul on us, at that point, we can't win, right? Like, if those are the rules you're setting and DeAndre Ayton is just going to get fouled out super fast and we don't have another big man. Like, I am terrified that the referees are all
on us. I love negative Shaheen. I love, like, oh, we're going to lose.
No, this isn't. I don't think this is negative. Those are all very actual facts that will probably happen in this game. And if they lose this game, they could
I never expected us to get this far. And at this point, I'm way too in deep. I can't handle us not winning. If we don't win, it's going to be the saddest thing that has ever happened to my life at this point. Like, I desperately need this title.
I'm putting this out there.
Understand how much I need this.
If the Suns win, I will. If the Suns win, I tweeted this. If the Suns win, I know, Sean, you're on board too. In 1,000% doing a shoey outside the Suns arena. Oh, and we will document it and put it out there
with hot sauce.
We're talking about one shoey. We're doing 50 shoeys. Y'all are not gonna hear from me for 2 weeks. Yeah. I'm gonna wake up in some back alley in Thailand if the Suns win the title.
And it better be a shoey from a stranger. I want to see someone walking by. Hey, you in the Suns jersey, give me your shoe.
If you're watching this and you're in Phoenix and you see Sean and I outside the arena and the Suns have just won, run up to us, take your shoe off. I will do a shoey and we will document it.
Hopefully that's on Saturday.
Fingers crossed. This is we'll be up on all podcasts. We'll see you next Wednesday. We're out.
Oh, happy birthday, Conor McGregor.
Happy birthday, AK.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.